Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. Once again, my name's Eric, and I'm here with my co-host, Raymond.
Hello, everyone.
This week, we had a light schedule in the GT circuit among tournaments in 40K, but there's lots of news to go over in our discussion, as well as several new codices coming out in the next few weeks. We got some previews, but the nice thing is the big GT that happened over this past weekend was the one we ran. Yay! So very excited, had some very interesting changes to the meta, as well as some very high-profile players from last year coming out of the woodwork and making their last-minute charge for dominance in the ITC circuit. So we're very excited to go over some of the lists, as well as the results from that week. We also have a quick update of your ITC Top 10, and then, of course, there's several big events next weekend. So for our following episode, which would be Episode 9? 10? Where are we at? I think we're in 10. So next week's episode will be jam-packed with more tournament coverage. Ray, how have you been spending your week? Because I know you were unable to attend the tournament. How are you coming with your hobby progress?
Well, I haven't really been doing much right now. I've been kind of theory hammering more than anything else right now.
Which is, you know, one of the things with all these new products coming out, big changes to the game every week, it seems like. Do you find that like the theory hammer is like a full-time job?
To an extent, I'm finding that there's more options available with these newer codexes than with the other ones. You know, back before this edition, it was very much, you know, you have a couple models that are good, everything else is trash, so just focus on these ones. It's a lot more open, it seems like, now, so.
A lot more combos, especially, also see that a lot of the, even though they tightened up the Allied system, you know, compared to where it was in 6th and 7th edition, there seems to be still a lot of synergies, especially between Imperial Soup and, as we talk about this week's list, the Chaos Soup is, or the Chaos Chili or Smorgasbord, whatever you want to call it. Lots of power to be found in there as well. So interesting to see as all things kind of work together and get that synergy between other lists, which is, you know, a popular buzzword, but it's the real deal. So we can get into that in greater detail. So ready for the highlights from this weekend?
Let's go.
All right, let's talk about your top eight. Coming in 8th place at the Rise of the Primarch GT. And by the way, this is an extremely competitive event, as usual for our events, which is good and bad. The good news is we attract a large crowd. Once again, the out-of-town people outnumber the locals 2-1. And we usually attract, because of that, the top California players, top Utah players, top Texas players. The Utah and Texas guys were unable to make it. The Texas guys just had a the Sidewinder GT last weekend. The Utah guys had an issue with getting a ride. But nonetheless, usually we have, of the 40-odd players that come to the event, 20 of them rank in the top 50 of the ITC overall, and this was no exception, so a lot of familiar names from last year's top-ranked ITC players. So nice to see them all back. As I mentioned, the name of the tournament was Rise of the Primarch, and you think with competitive players, they wouldn't think fluffy, but of the 34 players that arrived, 11 of them had a Primarch in their list.
So, it was almost pathetic.
Yeah, it was almost like a theme, you know, they're like, oh, is this a Primarch-only game? So, very interesting as we go through the lists. We were joking, what's the over-under and how many more Tarians there were? And there were a bunch, and not to be matched, quite a few. I already blanked on his name, Gilliman, and quite a few Magnus. So, matter of fact, you had to put your name on your Magnus or make sure it was painted uniquely. You might go home with the wrong Magnus. So anyway, back to our top eight. So in eighth place, you heard him last week giving a breakdown of the Death Guard Codex, and he took it with him. Don Husen, playing Death Guard, came in eighth place, going 3-2. Interesting quick remark about his games. His first game was a loss to Reese Robbins. Yes, that Reese Robbins from Frontline Gaming. And he freely admits that he just didn't get enough practice with the list and was a little too tentative. Then ran the Gambit 3 straight games of 19 points, max points. And then last game, he played another player who came finished in the top 10, and this simply said what, he lost track of time. He thought he had another 20 minutes and heard the buzzer and realized that that was last turn and cost him the game. Seventh place with Jeff Baer. He came with Cult Mechanicus. And yes, we were playing with the brand new codex, which we'll go over briefly. It won't be as in-depth as the Death Guard review. Be honest with you, as the TO, I had to do a quick sort of crash course in all things Mechanicus. And be honest, that is a codex that makes my brain hurt. So it was really tough to learn it real fast. So I was at least I had enough knowledge to be dangerous, which I was most of the weekend. But congratulations to Jeff Baer. Not only did he come in seventh place, but he also had one best appearance at the event. Sixth place was Zach Elgrozma with a Chaos Soup. He was rocking Magnus with a bunch of Knights and Brimstone Horrors, along with Fateweaver. Fourth place, Frankie GM Papa. Yep, that guy from Frontline Gaming. He brought his Adeptus Serratus list, and we're going to go over that in detail. Also tied for fourth place with Alan Deheza. You might recognize him as one of the top three Chaos players from last year. He came rocking an Alpha Legion list from Team Rage Quit Table Flip. In third place, one of the few locals who made the top five, Daniel Olivas. He was playing Inari. Really interesting list in terms of your the Yvain, I think is her name, the one with the crazy headdress.
Your brain, I think, is how it's pronounced.
Yrain. Okay. Yrain with a horde of Dark Reapers just soul bursting, getting double shots, surrounded by a screen of Wraith Guard. So it was an interesting list. Number two, really strong list, a very creative list, and just beautifully painted. Ryan Mead came in second with Death Guard. He too brought Mortarion, but he also included Scabalex. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He's the Forge World Great Uncleed One character in this list as well. Three malefic
Scabathrax.
Skybathrax. There we go. Included also three malefic lords, plague drones, six of them, as well as large unit of plague bearers, one unit of 28, and two units of brimstone horrors, and then of course Epidemus, a demon prince with wings, and a herald of Nurgle. That was his whole list. And beautifully painted. Just, I mean, you felt like you got infected just by walking by the table, and just really worked really hard. He went 4-1. But your overall winner, Warlord Champion, was James Cormona with a Chaos Soup list like never seen before. And it's very interesting for those of you who knew James Cormona from his list from last year. He was the king of Death Stars. I mean, he just pretty much brought a Death Star and it rocked up the table and took your lunch money. So for him to, he went a complete 180 degrees in the direction he was in last year. And we're going to go over his list in great detail because it's something very interesting. Kind of a little bit of take the best of everything that's in the Chaos Soup and mix it together into a gumbo. And that gets you a 5-0 record and a GT win.
That a perfect record.
Right, I mean 19, 19, 19, 19 across the board. Also, to make it a little more challenging for our players, day one, which was games one, two, and three, were ITC missions. Games two, which was games four and five, were Nova missions. One of the reasons we did that was not only to introduce our local meta to the Nova missions, but number two, nobody likes Relic, so we thought, well, the Nova version of Relic is a little more competitive. Then we thought, well, let's just make both games on day two, Nova missions. So being able to change gears from ITC missions to Nova missions really shows the top players rising to the top, and also made my life a little more exciting on day two as a TO, doing the scoring for Nova missions. There's a lot of players working through it for the first time.
Yeah, I think that might have had at least some effect on how some of the players did too.
Absolutely. There's the key, those of you who are unaware of Nova missions, we went over our Nova coverage a few weeks ago, but the short version is you pick your mission, either the book mission as stated, so you're trying to win at the end of the game, or a round by round scoring system. You also pick your secondary, so Linebreaker, Warlord, as well as there are nine other options to play with. And then tertiaries are simply if you score a kill point that turn, you get a point for rounds two through six. There also are maximums, so just because you killed 4,000 kill points, you'll only max out at 4 points. So it's very interesting to see that several players were able to get very high scores in the losing effort. That was a key thing. The other thing that's very unique about Nova missions that caught a couple of people off guard is that tabling an opponent does not mean an automatic 19-0 win. There are some players that are able to meet their objectives, therefore able to get their points. And in some cases, for example, if you table the player on turn four, you play out your turn and see if you can jump on the relic on turn five, where your opponent can do nothing about it. So it was a very interesting mix. All right, which list do you want to dive into first, Ray?
Let's look at James's.
All right, so James's. He gave it to me. I love James, but love you, James, but your list, man, I could have sworn he wrote it crayon on a napkin. Oh my God. But pure genius, if not artistically unsound. So let's start with the biggest part. So when you think chaos, you think small elite units. Nah. He starts with a brigade. Not a battalion, a brigade. That's the big one, folks. So right off the bat, he's got 9 additional command points. In the HQ slots, he's got 3 Malefic Lords. In the elite slot, he's got 3 units of Chaos Marauders. If you're not familiar from that, that is a four-tooled unit from the Lost and the Damned. In the fast attack slot, he had 3 units of one spawn just to fill up those slots. In the troop slots, 6 units of the minimum size Brimstone Horrors. And in the heavy support slots, he had a Chaos quad launcher as well as 2 heavy support squads from the Lost and the Damned. So you've got a wide range, you've got some screens, you've got a whole lot of smite, and you've got spawn for kind of a, soaking up multiple wounds, and you've got all those Brimstone Horrors to occupy the table. He's not done. He then adds a battalion detachment, this one being Alpha Legion. He has a Chaos Lord with a jump pack, a Chaos Sorcerer with a jump pack, 2 units of Khorne Berserkers, and 3 units of cultists, 2 at the minimum of 10, and a huge large one at 40. We'll get into why he did that in a second. And then he's not done yet. His third detachment is a Supreme Command detachment. So that includes the Changeling, another Malefic Lord, a second Malefic Lord. So altogether, you're at 5 Malefic Lords. And of course, well, he's got the points left over, Magnus the Red. So if you're trying to keep score at home, that's one for the command point for the Supreme Command, 3 command points for the battalion, giving you 4, 9 for the brigade, that gives you 13, and then because you're Battleforge, he is rocking 16 command points.
I didn't even think that was possible.
Most people didn't, and they look at that list and you go, what is this? So if you're having trouble following the list at home audibly, it looked just as confusing on the table. He generally filled his deployment zone with models. Between all those Brimstone Horrors, there's 60 Brimstone Horrors. You got the spawn got lost in the list. Then you've got all these Malefic Lords, and then the Chaos Cultists, the big blocks, everything. It's just a big mess, and you're looking at where do I even strike? And the key is, if you don't see it coming, it will be too late before you figure it out. So the Alpha Legion is the key part. He spends the good chunk of his command points early on. So the large, bulky cultist squad, as well as, yeah, the cultist squad will use the Alpha Legion trait to, I can't remember the exact term they use. I'm trying to avoid it. So we kept saying infiltrate because we're used to that from 7th edition. But basically, they have a stratagem that allows them to set up at least 9 inches away from your opponent after deployment. And the key thing is after roll the Cs. So it's not like he's putting that unit in harm's way by, oh, I'm right in your grill. Oh, you seized on me, you can attack. It is specifically stated after seize the initiative. The reason why this is important, why most of his opponents got caught off guard, is you think of it like a deep strike. That's your movement. Usually when you deep strike, you come down at the end of your movement, 9 inches away, and you're kind of stuck there for a turn. Being this is done in deployment, he can still move forward his regular move. He can advance, or in the most cases, what he did is he moved forward, shot, and charged. Add that to the sorcerer as well as the lord have jump packs, so they deep strike. So then he's using warp time if you decided, he wasn't close enough or needed to get closer in, or warp time the chaos lord so he can charge with the group. It just wrecked. So you're like, eh, big deal. It's cultist. They drop like flies. Then he spends the next command points to recycle using the Tide of Traitors stratagem from Alpha Legion, which means he recycles the cultist squad, but not only did they don't just start in his deployment zone, they come in 6 inches from any table edge. Let me repeat that. Any table edge. Side edges, his back edge, your back edge. So all of a sudden, you think you've dealt with a threat, and it's back, right at his discretion. That's just the cult. That's just the Alpha Legion detachment. At the same time, you've got Magnus the Red, just firing every, you know, all his psychic fun, flying upfield, wrecking things in close combat. You've got all those malefic lords smiting the snot out of your army. And if you think, well, okay, I got at least a turn to play, he's got the quad launchers and all those heavy support squads raining down long distance fire. Yeah, it's ballistic skill 4, but he's got a ton of shots, so whatever, he's going to get a couple hits on you no matter what. And then if you think you can charge forward, don't forget, he's still got the Khorne Berserkers, so he's using them a lot to also infiltrate and push them into your grill. Again, using warp time to get extra movement if you're out of position. Of course, Khorne Berserkers can swing twice, so it's just an oppressive list. And I was just watching him take players down early and often, which makes it a very interesting above-the-table situation where you've lost half your army on turn one. Your army on the table may be leadership 7, but you as a player, can you rally your own confidence to get back into the game? So that was a lot of rambling. Ray, what are your thoughts on that list?
I can't even imagine being able to keep all that track of everything in that list. It's just too much.
It's funny you say that, because if you do a lot of chunking, like you do with like memory experts, you know, kind of if you look at like social security numbers and telephone numbers in groups of 3s and 4s, he's done that really well. So he's got 5 malefic lords, but they all are pretty much there to cast smite. So it's just redundancy. So at one point, he's just got, okay, the 5 malefic lords do the same thing. He's got 3 spawn. They all do the same thing. He's got 3 squads of marauders. They do the same thing. Hold objectives. The brimstone horrors flood the battlefield. You know, you're not going to get to the objectives on his half of the table. You're not going to get to his half of the table without getting through those things. So it's a lot of one-role units, so it makes it easy to make those decisions. So it's going to be a very interesting list to see if this catches on in the meta. How do you defend against it? And he played it really well, and as he ran the gauntlet for this particular tournament, ran into some very tough players who traditionally you can think their way through, more problem-solving players, and was able to get through that. So very interesting list. Congratulations, James. Well done. One of the lists I wanted to also go over this tonight was in our final game, so this would be game 5 on the top table. James had to get through Frankie Giampapa to take top lead. And his list was, you know, we think of Sisters of Battle. First of all, gorgeously painted army, also done by the Frontline Gaming painting studio. Just absolutely amazing job. I'd heard about this list. We've talked about Adrian Dinar and playing Sisters of Battle. So what is it about Sisters of Battle that really stood out? And it's another one of these. It's not so much the list, it's the way you play it. So being there firsthand was a great experience. So let me pull up the list here for our listening pleasure and talk about that for one quick second. So I apologize. I'm going to butcher some of the names, because when I took a picture of the list, I cut off part of the names of the units. And I have not played against Sisters since probably 3rd edition. So he started off with a Vanguard detachment that includes the Priest, a large squad of Flagellants, a large squad of Death Cult Assassins, your basic Sister squad, a Dominion squad, all kitted out with 4 Meltas and then a Kami Melta on the Sergeant. The other secret squad is every one of his tanks came loaded with Melta, Kami Melta, and a Heavy Flamer. And he had 1, 2, 4 of those that kind of moved up in a group into kind of a wall, which we'll get to why that's important. I'm not sure what that is. Immolator is in that unit as well. Of course, he had Celestine and HQ. Beautifully painted. By the way, I was interesting. Whoever the artist was who did his work, you know those little like filigree things she's like flying on, which are just begging to be broken off? Yeah, he had clipped them, so she was actually on the base, wasn't flying high, and still looked incredibly impressive. And then he also took the second squad, which is an Outrider detachment, and this is the secret sauce, I think, to the list. Another Repressor, another Dominion, two more Dominion squads, and then two Seraphim squads, all kitted to the gills with Infernal pistols, with a plasma pistol on the sergeants at this point. And what's deceptive about this list is you've got a ton of Melta, I mean a ton of Melta, and it's incredibly fast. Two or three games I saw Frankie play, he would literally charge forward and box you into your own deployment zone. And I was like, you got to fight your way out. You really have to get through the tin cans, which are just unloading Melta after Melta after Melta. In the game against James, because James had a kind of a refused flank, he just boxed out that deployment zone as a Vanguard deployment. At one point, Frankie had James's Magnus surrounded and did eight Melta wounds. So he'd already got the hits and forced Magnus to make eight saves. That right there, if he even makes half of those saves, Magnus is probably going down because he was within Melta range. So you're rolling two dice, take the highest for damage. So quick math, even at four each, four times four, you're looking at 16 wounds. Magnus should be going down. James made every save. I was like, uh-oh. That might have been game. But some of the other things that worked out well, the Death Cult Assassins as well as the Flagellants, backed up by the priests, so they're re-rolling misses in close combat. They just wrecked face because they just have a ton of attacks. Death Cult Assassins have like five attacks each.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to say the Flagellants have I think, D6 attacks. I have to double check that. I apologize. Should have looked it up ahead of time. With an invul save. So they're coming in. They don't care how hard you hit. They're going to smack your team around. The other thing I thought was very interesting in watching Frankie play is, and this is a new skill for 8th edition, is he is the master of the fallback. He knows if the. I think we're still, because some of us brain-wise get stuck on 7th edition. That I'm stuck in combat, hopefully I can fight my way out of this. If he knows he's not going to win combat, or if he's going to take too many losses, he falls back and then moves in another unit to hold the other unit in place. Just a great job of kind of a shell game of moving units back and forth. Very interesting, and that's how he's able to deal with James's cultist squads, just rip them apart really, really easily. It was fun to watch, fun to learn what's going on there.
Two good lists and end up fighting against each other at one point.
Well, that's what you want with the Swiss pairing system, is you want the top players to decide it on the table. And I think that was well done. I think the mission was no particular advantage to either players. It was the Nova style scouring. So basically what that means is you can either take end of game, just like you've seen it, or the turn by turn. If you basically look at the, if I hold a 3-point objective, 2-point objective, 1-point objective, add them up, and the more points you have that turn, the more points you earn that turn. They clearly chose the right secondaries against each other. There's one where if you kill 60 models, you get two bonus points. Obviously, with these larger armies, that was the thing to do against James's list. All worked out quite well. I think maybe that was one mistake that Frankie made, was he chose Warlord, so he had to kill Magnus to get Warlord. But then again, he was in position to do it, so dice could have gone the other direction and could have probably turned the game at that particular point. So great fun to watch, great learning experience. So really good to see those players go at it. I got one more list I want to discuss with the group real quick, with you guys, just kind of enlighten me on this one. And it's one of our local guys, and I give him a hats off at this point, because one thing we've talked about on previous episodes is our local meta does not really go with the national meta. So as we're covering events for the show, we're talking a lot about screens, we're talking about larger units, conscript walls, and all that sort of thing. So I plan my list accordingly. Ray, you've been talking about some of your lists to deal with that, and we show up for an event and three knights and Magnus. Oh, okay. That was what I was expecting. So Robert Dayton, he's mostly known as a Harlequin player, came with an Inari list, and he was basically, how am I going to beat the local guys at their own meta? And found a neat way of doing it. His list consists of two spearhead detachments. First one is an Autark, Banshee Mass Reaper Launcher, unit of Dark Reapers, as well as a Wave Serpent with a Twin Bright Lance. Then he took a second spearhead detachment with a Warlock, a second one with Yavrain, and then lastly, another unit of Dark Reapers. Looks like four units of three. And then the earlier spearhead, he took three units of three. So quick math, that is 9 plus 9 is 18, 21 Dark Reapers that he's starting with there. Also with a Wave Serpent. And last but not least, he is super heavy auxiliary unit. He took a Cobra, which is a Forge World heavy tank, which falls just under that 31 power level gap. Comes with a scatter laser, crystal targeting matrix, so therefore he can move and shoot without the heavy bonus, as well as spirit stones. The Cobra has a gargantuan cannon on it, and basically point in the direction of the super heavy and delete it in one turn. So a great mix. He utilizes Soul Burst as well as the Yunari psychic powers to create Soul Bursts, so his Dark Reapers don't care what you have for minus ones or whatnot. They always hit on threes, mixing and matching the right ammunition from the Reaper launchers to take out their opposing foe. So very interesting list, and it was really ideal for our local meta, so my hat's off to him for that particular. And he came in at 11th. He also went 3-2, and just didn't. Unfortunately, he took a first-round loss, which kind of messes up your ITC points in terms of growing your momentum into the system. Ray, what do you think?
Very interesting list.
Very interesting indeed. As a TO, I have to start off, no event goes off without a hitch, and I made one pretty bad mistake, so I hope the guys are listening and do this. There was some miscommunication on start time for day two. We had communicated that to the group, but sometimes it doesn't always sync through. They looked at the store hours, saw that the store doesn't open till it started almost at noon on Sundays, so they thought round two. So they got, when they arrived at 11:15, they thought they'd be early for the tournament. Yeah, our round started at 10:30. Check-in was at 10 o'clock. So being 45 minutes late, I had already counted them as dropouts, had already paired everything, said, hey, look, I'm sorry, wish we could work it out. I was double-checking the standings, saw where they were in the rankings, saw I had an open table due to the other drops from other people, raced out in the parking lot to see if I could find them, and I missed them. So, Patrick and Ron, I screwed up. My apologies to you. I'd love to invite you back. So, next time we were planning on running another event in January, I'd love you guys to come back, and your entry fee is on me. So, I totally screwed up. You guys should have played day two, and that is totally my fault. So, I apologize. Hope you guys are listening, and I hope to hear from you soon. So, other than that, a lot of people are asking me, hey, what kind of rules questions you got? Mostly we're explaining the Nova missions. Still the one rule that's holding people up is the closest visible target has to be a character. So is that visible, or you know, if it's behind cover? Well, we had a lot of line of sight blocking terrain. There's a character here. Yeah, you can't see it. So this is now the closest visible. It is a character. You can shoot it. So there's some confusion there. I had to make a couple rulings on that. But other than that, I walked the rows of tables and greeted people nicely, and I had not a whole lot to do, so it was kind of a nice event.
Yeah, I heard plenty of people enjoyed it, including a few that hadn't been in tournaments for a while.
Yeah, that was always good to see. Guys always see some new faces, which was exciting to see. So really good. I want to thank everyone at Imperial Outpost Games in Glendale, Arizona for helping us put on the event. Also want to thank my co-TO, Don. Don doesn't get as much of the credit as I do because I do all the game day stuff and all the announcements. But let's be honest, without Don, he's the one who does the preliminary work. He talks to the store. He sets up the Facebook page and all the preliminary stuff and choosing the missions and everything. It was up to me. This would never get done. So Don, without Don's prep work and getting all that done, great job, and so we do it together as a team, so I want to give him accolades for also getting this event taken care of.
I was going to say, don't cut yourself too short. You work on terrain for these tournaments too, so.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So yeah, I was in a bit of a crunch, as always. Part of it's my own lack of planning, but part of it is life sometimes gets in the way, and this was an example of that week. Good news is the kids didn't have school Thursday and Friday, so I took Thursday and Friday off, thinking I would have a couple solid hours of getting some outdoor painting, which is ideal for terrain making. Didn't happen. So I was literally, we had to set up the event the night before. We shut down open gaming on Friday night at midnight so we can set up. Usually done by 1. At 10 o'clock, I was still painting terrain, adding some last minute line of sight blocking terrain. So as most people describe it, it was very functional, but not my best work when it comes to panache. Oh my God. But I was very glad to see that. We learned a lot in terms of some subtle changes we'll make for our next tournament. But that was one of the key things. We try to stay as close to the Nova format for terrain so it's consistent from table to table. But yeah, some of my line of sight blockers were just boring. They couple added touches here and there would have been a little bit nicer. But yeah, so yeah, it's funny when people ask, "Oh, where'd all the terrain come from?" It's my personal collection. I have enough for 40 players. So, which is funny. It's starting to take over my garage, so I'm gonna have to figure out a way to weed out some of the older stuff. But that's for another episode. We can talk about that at another time. Trying to think what else. Oh, and a quick shout out to Imperial Outpost Games for the prize support. Out of the blue, the owner Darren walked up to me and said, "Oh, why don't you raffle this one off as well?" And I looked at him like, "Well, what is it?" It's this, large brown box. And so I'm opening it, and it has this like Imperial seal taping the thing shut. It says, "I don't want to open it because I don't want to, for all I notice, it's going to like deface the value of it." So I've noticed on the sticker it was a Space Marine Codex, but it was the Primaris edition.
Oh, it was the $225 collector's edition.
That's the one which is no longer available. So we raffled off one of those in addition to all the prize support we gave out. So it's like, oh.
I would
So
have
I
bought
got
it
the.
if it wasn't quite so expensive.
Well, somebody walked out of there for free. And actually, I can tell you who did that. Give me a quick minute. He was playing. Yeah, Brian Cornett. He was playing Black Legion. He had a. So, and he was super excited because he wanted the Space Marine Codex anyway. So, and so he was super excited.
All right, well, congratulations to him.
Congratulations to him, and congratulations to all our winners, our top 8, as well as our best appearance winners. And thank you again for everyone coming. And that was a great event. All right, welcome back. Now we're going to get into our discussion portion of the show this week. Talk about some of the new codexes that are coming out. So, day of the event was the Adeptus Mechanicus Codex. We did allow it at the event. As I mentioned, did a quick crash course flipping through the stratagems to become familiar with that and the new Forge World traits. We did have 3 AdMech players in the tournament. One came in 7th, one came about middle of the pack, one towards the bottom of the pack. Still too early to really understand the full impact of the AdMech Codex. It is a complex codex. Scutari, as well as the old Cult Mechanicus, as well as the Knights, are combined into one single codex. Lots go on. So as we learn a little bit more, we'll go over it in greater detail, much like we did Death Guard in our previous episode. But Ray, you said there was another announcement over the weekend.
So the GW announced that the next codex coming out will be the iGuard Astra Militarum. They announced that there would be 8 regiments, basically filling in the same thing as chapter tactics for the Space Marines or the Traitor Legion or the Forge World. So those 8 will be Cadia, Catachan, Armageddon, Talarn, Valhalla, Vestroia, Mordian, and then they're actually making the Militarum Tempestus their own regiment.
Well, that's interesting. Huh. I was wondering how they're going to work them into the mix. That's pretty cool. And a lot of those models are, people have them, they've been collecting them, hard to get, so it'd be interesting to see them back on the table.
Definitely.
Now, if I understand, also the Catajan, for lack of a regimental traits, I guess that's what they're calling them, were released on the community page.
Yeah, they did that. I believe it was might have been this morning, but nothing too crazy. I don't remember right off the top of my head, but I did see that they've got plus one strength, just to kind of help emphasize the fact that they live in a jungle.
They all look like Rambo. So let me pull them up. So yes, infantry units in this doctrine add one to their strength characteristic. In addition, they add one to their leadership if they're within 6 inches of a friendly Catogen officer. Each time a vehicle from this doctrine fires a ranged weapon that makes a random number of attacks, so heavy D6, heavy 2D6, etc., you can re-roll one of the dice used to determine the number of attacks made. Let me
Right.
tell you, you know how many command points I waste re-rolling those? So that's pretty awesome. So other things they talked about specifically, there's a new stratagem for the Death Strike, calling that the right thing? Yes, Death Strike missile. Allows it to basically become a vortex missile of some kind. So this is 3 command points. Use the stratagem before you fire a Death Strike missile. You can re-roll failed to hits with this shot. In addition, add 1 to the roll when made to determine whether other units within 6 inches are hit. If a model is wounded but not slain by the attack, roll another dice. On a 6, the model suffers a D6 further mortal wounds. So you might want to spread out when you see that thing on the table.
Might be a good idea.
Last but not least, Vicious Traps. This is a Catogen stratagem, specifically 1 command point. Use the stratagem when an enemy unit finishes a charge within 1 inch of a Catogen unit from your army that is wholly on or within a terrain feature. Roll a dice. On a 4+, the unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. Take that, and that's addition to Overwatch. And so you imagine that with a whole bunch of flamers and adding that on top of it.
Could be good.
Could be good. So be interesting to see how that all plays out, as well as the other regiments that come out. Yeah, they're calling it regimental focus, is what they're calling these. So interesting to see how they come out with those as they come through. But as Ray mentioned, those other 7, a lot of fan favorites, a lot from the fiction. Love to see the armies play out like they actually do in the books and still be competitive at the same time. So good to see that. So during our tournament wrap-up, we also discussed a lot of the armies that were there, but there were quite a few armies that were conspicuous by absence. And interesting, as we go through not only the top 8, but just the whole field in general, there were some key players that simply weren't there. And so number one on the list, I see, we've been talking a lot about new Codex release. Not a single Grey Knight player had arrived, which was interesting since Grey Knights took the Come the Apocalypse GT last weekend. Very interesting. Didn't see that. Even when the player, our usual players who couldn't make the tournament, stopped by, he said, "Wow, I wish I brought my Grey Knights. With the number of demon players here, I would have cleaned up." Why no Grey Knights? What are your thoughts, Ray?
Honestly, I think it's a case of elite army versus horde army. The people who are bringing the more elite armies with the fewer models, I think, just want stronger things. Higher toughness are something that's a little bit more tankable. Things like Magnus or Knights. Otherwise, what they want more bodies. And Grey Knights, while they're more competitive, they still can't quite bring the numbers.
Interesting, but on the we'll also see though with the Malefic Lords in high demand, the Smite spam seemed to be the order of the day as well, and just at the Primarch bonanza. So, and one army that does Smite spam better than anyone is Grey Knights. So between that and all the bonuses against Chaos and Demons, I could have seen a Grey Knight player do well. It's not one of my favorite armies. It's not one of those I like to play, so I've kind of dismiss it in my head, but that doesn't mean it could still be competitive by any means. So I just thought it was interesting.
As someone who plays the chaos into that, Thousand Sons, I definitely think that they could have done very well. unfortunately, it's not always about what people bring, it's about what people think other people are going to bring.
Yeah, I thought you were going to play scissors, so I brought paper. You know, I did not bring paper. And of course, everybody brought rock. Anyway, that probably didn't make sense. Anyway, moving on. Other factions that weren't nowhere to be found. Necrons. A couple of my friends were actually egging me on. I should bring Necrons, given our local meta. I have a certain Forge World model that's really good at taking out tanks. I decided I'd stick with my faction so I can pick up points for best in faction. Of course, being TO, that didn't happen, but that's okay. I was there to run the event. So, yeah, no Necrons across the board.
I'm kind of not surprised at that. I still think 8th edition kind of stole the rug out from under them. One of their big things was always their gauze weapons, which put them a cut above everybody because they could take out tanks easier than anybody else. But that just did not translate well into 8th edition. The list I've been seeing that tends to do a little bit better when it comes to Necrons is actually spamming Scarab Swarms. I remember seeing that in the tournament probably about 4 or 5 weeks back now. But that's the list I see when it comes to competitive Necrons.
Yeah, it's interesting with because Scarab Farms were popular a while ago, but the key thing that's different is that these Scarabs simply replace Fallen Scarabs. You can't start off with the minimum, sit in your backfield for 2 turns, grow your Scarabs to just horde size, and then spring them on your opponent. Those days are gone. You're just simply replacing Fallen Scarabs with your Tomb Spiders. But one thing I do like about the Tomb Spiders is the Gloom Prism pretty much comes stock, so you do give you an opportunity to deny the Witch, and with the amount of Smite Spam, I think they could have been pretty competitive. A few opportunities to stop some of the few smites. I mean, you're only allowed one a turn, but yeah, if you took that list, you had your 3 or 4 Tomb Spiders, give you a few opportunities.
I don't remember seeing even that many spiders in these lists, in the lists, though. Because what they tend to do, if I remember right, is they'll have their max size scarabs. They'll have their HQ unit, and then what they'll have is the Necron Pylon.
Yes, I love that model. Yeah, the gargantuanly large. My friends back east used to call it the sea monster because it's basically this big half crescent gun, and it just kind of sits there and blows holes in people's knights. So I love that gun.
Pretty much half a satellite dish.
Yeah. It's very one-dimensional. It's almost 500 points. So yeah, you're taking out a large unit, but boy, there was an orc horde there. Jake Ballard is one of the top 3 orc players in the country, was there. I didn't have a lot of answers for that. I mean, I think he had this, I forgot what the name of the jump pack orcs are called. The Rocket Boys? Is that what they are?
Sure.
Just hordes of them, and they're just leaping on players and just tearing down. I mean, it's just, the board was just covered with green. I was just like, holy cow, how do you even get through that? So, interesting to see, you know, a certain list. So sometimes, like you said, zigs and zag against the, you prepare for one army, you make yourself vulnerable for another. There were a few Eldar players, unlike previous tournaments we've talked about in previous weeks, where at least Eldar cracked the top 8, not the case here. We did have an Inari crack the top with mostly Eldar, but with Daniel Olivas, but few and far between, and it really, I think the Eldar players were just kind of like, I brought the army I have. I don't think they were making a conscious decision that this was the army they thought they could win with. I think they just brought the army they had. So it was interesting. But again, we're expecting a new codex for Eldar shortly after Guard. So that may change rapidly at this particular point.
Yeah, definitely. We've only got... It's already almost... We're making our way to October rather quickly. So we've got, what, about 2-3 months before December, and we've still got, what, 4-5 more codexes that they said would be out before Christmas?
Yep, so we know Guard's coming out next. And I don't know if the announcement at GW was in order, so I'm not 100% sure. Tyranids, which could be very interesting. I think they have a lot of tools already to be competitive. I can't imagine what the stratagems do on top of that. And then the idea of individual Hive fleet traits could be incredible. Oh, that would be wild. Tyranids, Craftworld Eldar, and then the two mystery ones, the last two of the year.
At this point, I'm curious as to when they're going to announce what those two will be.
What's your bet? What do you think they'll be?
Well, there's what I would like them to be and what they'll probably be.
There we go. Fair enough. So, what would you like them to be?
I would like one of the two to be Thousand Suns, because I'd really like to just get their codex and have it done with. But let's see. If I were to put my money on anything, I would say that one of them would be another Imperium one, most likely probably another Space Marine one.
Okay.
Not Dark Angels.
Really? Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because I
Why not?
honestly think that the next Primarch to come out will be the Lion.
Okay.
He's the only one, the other one that we actually know in the fluff where he is.
So I agree with you and I disagree with you. I think because of that, we know the Lion is available. The Primarchs from Chaos outnumber Imperium 2-1, so we're due to get an Imperial Primarch. I think they will come out with the Lion right before Christmas to take advantage of the holiday shopping season. So I definitely think one of your last codices of 2017 will be Dark Angels for that very reason.
Okay. But as for the other one, it's going to be another Xenos. Even you mentioned it a while back that you heard orcs floating around. Very much see that being the case. Otherwise, it'd probably be Necrons.
Ooh, didn't think of that.
And mostly because it's not going to be Gene Stealer Cult, because it'll just be doing the Tyranids. And I don't see it being the Tau, just because they're doing Eldar. And Eldar are another one of the powerhouse, former powerhouse ones. I could see them giving a little bit of time in between them.
Interesting. So, for me, which ones I want? Obviously, I want Jukari because that's what I play, and love to see the Witch Cults and the Homunculus Covens fleshed out as well as the Cobbles. I think that'd be great. But I also know that they already come out with Craftworld Eldar. Not gonna happen. I don't think it's gonna happen in this round. I definitely agree with you. I think both. I like the rumors about orcs. I think that makes sense. They're kind of a standalone Xenos. They don't really have a lot of allies. So I think that'd be a really good mix, especially bringing in the cults, Cult of Speed and the clan, excuse me, is what I meant to say. Bad Moons and Gits and all the other characters. It'd be great to see them back in the Codex. It's been years, centuries since they've been in the Codex. But if I had to guess, I mentioned my Dark Angels would be one, and because I hate this Codex with every bone in my body, Blood Angels. Just to stick it to me, they're gonna come out with Blood Angels before the end of the year.
I don't think they're gonna do two chapters of Space Marines back to back. They won't do it.
You don't think so?
If you take a close look, for the most part, there's been a bit of a pattern. They haven't actually done, with the exception of when they brought out two codexes at the same time, they have not done one overall group at the same back to back. They have not done an Imperium, and then it followed by an Imperium. It's been like Imperium Chaos, Imperium Xenos. Wait. Which is why, if anything, I'll be honest, I think the next one after Admech will be Eldar.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny to hear you go through your conspiracy theory. I heard it in an interview with I just Duncan there from the website, the painting guru who does all those little shorts tutorials on their Facebook page. And apparently the guy that runs the cafeteria at Games Workshop is always trying to guess what's coming out next because Duncan tries to wear a shirt that's themed to what he's painting that day. So it's like, that's what I'm wondering, is somebody using the cafeteria worker as a leak for new codexes?
We'll have to find out because I'm still waiting for a video to come out for Martarian.
That'd be interesting to see, because you could probably do several videos with that. Hey, did you download the Paint app by any chance?
I actually, so let's be completely honest. I downloaded it on my iPod and I downloaded it on my cell phone because I was kind of hoping that I might get drawn for the full collection of the paints. Did not happen.
Many will enter, few will win. Yeah, I. Of course, my phone is too old to run the app, so I was kind of like, "Oh crap!" But one of these days. So, and it's not available
I
on
will have to
Kindle.
let you know for the low price of about the same cost as Death Shroud Terminators, you too can get a brand new cell phone.
Where? Come on, an iPhone for that little amount? No way.
I didn't say iPhone. I did not say iPhone.
Okay, there you
I
go.
mean, if you want iPhone, you could always just wait in line for the iPhone X.
I am not waiting in phone for. I don't even wait in line for the Blade Runner sequel. But anyway, we're off topic.
Now the Citadel paint app's actually pretty good, and some of the paints are, combinations I never would have thought of that I'm actually considering trying out.
Such as?
The Demonette armor, actually.
Really?
Yeah. So, for anybody who doesn't know what that is, it actually falls under the silver, so it's a little hard to find if you don't know where to look for it. It's basically silver with the purple shade, and then just edging with a little bit of silver to kind of give it a metallic purple look.
That does sound pretty cool.
That,
So that's like on their lawnmowers and stuff like that, right? That's so, yeah.
yeah. The app itself, it every once in a while has some glitches when it comes to the pictures, which unfortunately, when it comes to them giving you an example of the pictures, just for colors, it's always that space, one of the Space Marine backpacks. Not really the greatest for seeing things like flesh tones. But it's also got the ability for you to look at, painting by miniature. It does not have every picture, every miniature available. And it, even what they do, it's a little bit limited. For instance, when it comes to something like, oh, let me think. It was a Cabalite warrior. It's only
Wait,
going to show
what?
you one color setup.
Oh, yeah, well. I'm just shocked they acknowledged Drukhari existed, so yay.
well, we can look at another thing like the AdMech stuff. They only show Mars. The only one that they, the only one, the only color setups they have are Mars. So if you want to do Graia, Ryza, Metallica, they don't have those set up yet. So, people are waiting. They don't even have, like I said, they don't even have all of the models available. They do have a few that you can actually look up, but they don't have the full selection yet.
Give it
In fact,
time.
they didn't.
Just launched. Right. I guess I'll be patient. Well, I'll see if I can download it on one of my other devices and see how it works out. All right, we're coming into the tail end here of our episode this week. Let's go over our ITC top 10 players as of this recording. And coming in so far, so good news is I submitted my results on time. So yes, our Rise of the Primarch GT is actually included into the ITC scorings as we speak. So hats off to Best Coast Pairings to get them in that quickly. So our top 10, in 10th place, Andrew Ford. With 579 points, he's 58 points off the pace for first place. Ninth place, Taylor DeVries at 42 points off the pace. He is a mere 1 point behind Brandon Grant in eighth place, with and he is also about 41 points off the pace. So to really get down, 1.1 point difference between Brandon and Tyler between eighth and ninth place. Sixth and seventh place also wafer thin approach. In seventh place is Aaron Along. He is 39.2 points off the pace and is less than a half a point behind Paul McKelvey, who was your number one about 4 weeks ago. Seems like an eternity. Come on, Paul. Tao Empire needs to represent. He is 39 points off the pace of our first place victor at the moment. We talked a little bit about Frankie's Sisters of Battle, another strong Sisters of Battle player, also from the West Coast, Adrian Gennard. He is 29 points off the pace, currently in fifth place overall. In fourth place, Ian Andrew at 25 points off the pace. Third place, Sam Henley, 22 points off the pace, and then a huge leap forward into second place, Andrew Gagneau, at 633 points. He's got an 18-point lead over Sam and only 4 points behind the number one player, but he still remains there from last week, Nick Nottavati, at 637 points. He is your top ITC player for this week. So next week, Ray, what do we have for events?
So the only major GT level event we've got going on this weekend is the Iron Halo, which is in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, it looks like you might be out of luck. It does say on the Best Coast Pairing apps that there is one spot available, but chances are by the time you're listening to this, it's already been taken. So we're looking at already a full roster for that, and it's not even Wednesday.
How many players do they have for that event? You mentioned a full roster.
You know, I got to be completely honest. They have not been kind enough to put numbers next to all these, but it's quite a bit.
Okay, we'll take a look at it. So we'll have all your results from that particular event next week, as well as some more updates as more tidbits of Regimental Focus comes out during the week from the Warhammer community page. Also, look for your comments and feedback on our Facebook page. You can find it at Exterminatus Podcast on Facebook. And, Ray, any closing thoughts?
Actually, there is. So, Eric, you don't know this, but you're finding out now. I actually posted up on our Facebook page that I wanted our listeners' thoughts on a discussion they would like us to talk about. All they have to do is post a reply to the post I put on Facebook as there's something they'd like to hear us talk about, and it gets the most likes. We'll talk about it. Within reason, of course.
Within reason, of course. Now, I look forward to that, so look forward to your likes and suggestions. Until next week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.